Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network and presented in partnership with TrekCore.com. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on September 11th, 2021, and is current through the Star Trek Lower Decks episode, An Embarrassment of Duplers, so beware of spoilers. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. It's a catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a 40-minute news show, though I think it might go a little longer this week, covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are multiple television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me, and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone, and given it was a huge week for Star Trek news this week with the advent of Star Trek Day, I have invited two special returning guests to talk about everything we learned. First up, it's at Rogue Moog himself on Twitter. It's Caleb Dorsch. Welcome back, Caleb.
Hey, Alex. Happy to be here.
And lastly, the co-host of the First Flight podcast right here on the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network, it's Abby Summer. Abby, welcome back to Weekly Trek.
Thanks so much for having me. I can't wait to discuss this awesome event.
All right, Abby and Caleb. Well, normally I would ask you at this point of the show what you're feeling good about Star Trek this week, but I think the answer is pretty obvious for this week. This is our Star Trek Day episode. So we will take as read that Star Trek Day is what we're feeling good about. But before we get into the news of Star Trek Day, of which there is plenty, I'm curious, generally, this was the first time that Viacom CBS has done this kind of live event for Star Trek. Last year, we had Star Trek Day. It was the first Star Trek Day where they'd done kind of an event, but it was all kind of, you know, Zoom panels and things like that. This year, first time doing a live event. What did we think? How did you like it?
For me, I think my favorite part outside of all the outstanding news was the orchestra performance that Jeff Russo and crew gave to us. And I think for me, there was just a lot of things that they did in those medleys that just really resonated with me. One of my favorites, of course, is Archer's theme, which I tweeted out as soon as I heard it. I was like, someone check on Jim Morehouse, because we know that's our, we've all been on Trek ranks before, the three of us, and we love Archer's theme at the end of there. But I also love to hear Discovery, and Picard's theme was really moving too, to hear that finally perform live. And yeah, it was really well done. And even all the medleys from the older shows of Star Trek that were great to hear brought back as well.
Abby, what about you?
Well, I agree. The orchestration was absolutely filling my heart with joy, though I was kind of hoping for a rendition of Faith of the Heart, because I'm always kind of hoping for a rendition of Faith of the Heart. But that was beautiful. And I think it really spoke to how honest and joyful everybody on that stage was, and the music just helped with that. We all know that the orchestration in Star Trek really emphasizes all of the feeling that we get from it, and everybody up there was just glowing and positive and excited. And, you know, I adore Wil Wheaton, and watching him just be surrounded by Trek like that really just makes me squee with delight in my little childhood heart to see him grown up and still being just as excited and passionate and seeing the people he knows and the new people he's getting to meet for the first time. And that really resonated with me. And I love seeing Mika Burton up there too. I mean, this is generations of Trek right here, and they could not have picked better hosts, in my opinion.
Yeah, this was a great event. I mean, it was the first time they've done this, and there were some ropey sections, you know, there were some, I think, a couple of intermissions went on a little longer than they thought they were going to. And so there was a lot of vamping by the red carpet hosts. But overall, I mean, it was terrific. Tons of fun, a great opportunity to kind of share this experience with fans all across the world. I mean, I know the timing of it wasn't great because it was on the evening on the West Coast of the US, which means that it was basically like right in the middle of the night in Europe. But still, all of that aside, what a terrific treat. And how wonderful that, right? This is the 55th anniversary of Star Trek. Flashback to Star Trek Day 2016, the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. What did Viacom CBS do that day to celebrate the birth of the franchise? Nothing, exactly. Right? They did nothing. There was nothing. There was fans organized a group rewatch of The Man Trap at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, and that was it. The company might well not have acknowledged that the anniversary even exists. I mean, they had the big Star Trek Mission New York convention and Star Trek Las Vegas, but like for Star Trek Day itself, they did nothing. This year, a major live event. I'm told the plans for it were scaled back considerably from what they were hoping it was going to be because of the Delta variant and COVID. I think there was originally plans for a much larger audience, a much bigger kind of spectacle. But even for what it ended up being, it was really terrific. And you had luminaries of Star Trek past and present. Every show managed to get a little bit of a moment. You know, obviously all the attention, what we're going to talk about from now on, is going to be kind of on these new shows and the news that came out of it. But I don't want that to conceal the fact that, you know, we had bits on Enterprise and on Deep Space Nine and on Voyager and on The Next Generation and on the original series. There was the Gene Roddenberry Legacy panel, which was really great too. So it really was sort of a celebration of the whole history of Star Trek. And I think, you know, that was part of what I really, really liked about it.
Well, and it's a good jumping off point for the future. I mean, they've tried some new things. They've tried all, you know, virtual, they've tried live and virtual mix. I think it's only going to get better from here because we are all a very forgiving audience because we loved every second that they were putting out, whether it was vamping or not. Sure. But I think they're going to tighten it up. And I think they've learned. And I think one of the things that I've seen from Paramount Plus itself that really made me happy was they said that, you know, they're going to have a quicker turnaround time on getting the panels out on YouTube and Paramount Plus and other platforms for people who couldn't stay up around the world, because I didn't think they expected quite as much international reaction from people going, I have to work tomorrow. Please put this out there so I can watch it. And I mean, 2 days is not a bad turnaround, but I think they're aware how much love Star Trek fans around the world have now. And this is just going to become a better event every year.
I totally agree with Abby's point there. And, you know, with the pending rollout of Paramount Plus internationally, I think there's a good chance that, you know, there's no reason they can't do this, you know, in a different country or, you know, still do it in LA or even do separate ones where it's like LA and Toronto and then one in the UK or something like that, right? They could really get their money's worth and make all the fans happy with something like that in the future.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on and I'm a reporter.
Okay, we will break this down in order of the panels at Star Trek Day that had significant news that came out of them. So we'll start with Prodigy, then we'll do Discovery, then Strange New Worlds, and finally Picard. So let's begin with Star Trek Prodigy.
How did a ship get inside here?
The more important question, how do we get it out?
Join us. You always wanted to see the stars.
On behalf of Starfleet, welcome aboard.
What is that?
Have you ever even flown a ship before?
No. Does it show?
Disabling gravity.
Okay.
We get to go there and explore.
This ought to be good.
It appears we are fighting now.
No one shall escape. Get me my ship!
There goes our exit.
We're so dead.
Fire the pew, pew, pew button.
I don't see a pew, pew, pew button.
Just hit them all until it goes pew, pew. Woo!
We've got phasers, baby!
Yeah! I've seen my share of wayward crews, and I can tell you this. You've got potential.
Yes, we got a new full trailer for Star Trek Prodigy Season 1 at Star Trek Day, which gave us a much better look at our new crew, the USS Protostar, the Janeway hologram, and more. In addition to the trailer, we also got key art for the first season, which you'll start to see showing up on promo posters around the country and all across the internet, showing our crew and the Protostar above them. And lastly, and perhaps most excitingly, we got our release date for Star Trek Prodigy Season 1, which will begin streaming in the US on October the 28th on Paramount Plus with a 1 hour premiere episode. That is just 2 weeks after season 2 of Lower Decks will conclude. Abby and Caleb, what did you think of the trailer and how excited are you for Prodigy Season 1? Abby, why don't we start with you this time?
Well, I'm going to start with pew, 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 because that was awesome. It made me just absolutely squeal. And I have two young daughters, and they're a little bit on the young age for this. They're almost 6 and 3, but I watched the teaser with them. I watched this with them, and the amount of joy I saw from them shows me that this is going to be a hit. I mean, my older daughter is obsessed with Murph. She thinks he's the most beautiful thing ever, and she's been drawing pictures. My little one's been going around pressing buttons and saying pew, 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 and they're excited, and they're asking me, when is it? Can we put it on our calendar? So that's exactly what this is designed to do, and it's exciting for me to be able to really have a Star Trek that I can share with them, because they've watched a little here or there, but it's a little bit over their heads still. So to have this opening the door for this new generation of Trek fans is awesome. And it is so beautiful. Oh my goodness. This animation is high quality. And I know we've been waiting and we've been just aching for trailers and teasers and information and pictures, but it's worth it because every shot in that was beautiful. And I think it gives us enough that we can start theorizing for the next, 6 weeks-ish about all the little things here and there and all the connections. But it also gives us that feeling of hope and joy and excitement that we have something new coming out. And I cannot wait to watch this in October.
I am in the same boat. I'm very, very excited. I was already thrilled by the release of the theme music the other week, and seeing, it was just beautiful. I love Michael Giacchino's scores in the Kelvin's movies, and it was great to hear some of those influences still on the Prodigy theme, but it's still, like we said, very tied to that Voyager era. The graphics, 100%, they're beautiful. The ship, it's probably one of my new favorite ship designs. It's awesome. I love that we got to see John Noble's character for a brief glimpse, the Diviner. That I'm really intrigued about that. I'm looking forward to that probably the most, just learning more about what motivates him. He seems like it'll be more complex villain for like a kid's show. But the other thing that they really stress at the Star Trek Day panels is that, the original intention was that this is a kid's show, but they really want to make animated shows for Star Trek appeal, at least this one, appeal for all audiences. So obviously we know we're going to watch it, right? But it's great that it's going to have this broad appeal for everyone. And I think it's going to be a good way to kick off this next portion of new Star Trek that's on television.
Yeah, this is terrific. And October the 28th is not very far. It's only about 6 weeks away at this point, which is really, really exciting that this is now right around the corner. And in some ways, it is nice that sort of first full trailer doesn't come until you're right up against the premiere, because then you can just ride that excitement right through into seeing that first episode. I'm also really excited that the first episode is going to be an hour long.
Yes.
It's been a while. I mean, we haven't gotten a quote unquote feature length episode for the show itself since Broken Bow for Enterprise, right? Discovery, it was two separate episodes. I mean, they kind of joined together to make one, but still it was not your big feature premiere. Picard was just an hour-long episode for an hour-long series. Lower Decks was a 30-minute episode for a 30-minute series. And now Prodigy, an hour-long episode for a 30-minute series. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And it'll give us that really nice opportunity to spend some good time with these characters to kind of lay the groundwork for the series that will come from it. And there's lots to look forward to here. And it was thrilling to finally get the chance to see the animated Janeway. And it just looks so, so good.
I don't want to leave this section without saying, too, about how every time that I see Brett Gray, who plays Dahl, in person, he just exudes happiness and positivity. And I am so excited to see him be excited about Prodigy. And that just speaks volumes about what a positive experience it was for the cast of this show as well, especially for him. He just glows every time I see him.
Yeah. I mean, his reactions at the panel pretty much was like, I can't believe I'm on Star Trek. Like, this is so surreal. Like, it's amazing. I'm very excited for that as well. Just a reflection on the trailer, to Alex's point about the hour long, a lot of that footage actually seemed like it might mostly be from that first episode. So there's still just so much that we can look forward to. And we know that we're going to have to unpack as the series goes on. But yeah, it seemed like they have a really solid first episode. It's going to be a wild hour. I'm so excited.
Plenty to look forward to for Star Trek Prodigy, and now not too long to wait. But Star Trek Prodigy is not the only new season of Star Trek premiering this fall. Yes, in addition to Prodigy dropping on October the 28th, Star Trek Discovery Season 4 will premiere on, drumroll please, November the 18th. Yes, you heard that right. Star Trek Discovery Season 4 will premiere only 3 weeks after Star Trek Prodigy, which means that for the first time since What You Leave Behind, the Deep Space Nine finale in 1999, two Star Trek shows will be on air at the same time. And that should last for about 6 weeks. We did not get a new trailer for Discovery Season 4 at Star Trek Day. We expect a second trailer will come in early October at the Star Trek Discovery panel at New York Comic Con, but we did get a new picture of Captain Michael Burnham in the Discovery command chair, wearing the new uniform style that the Disco crew will be rocking this season. And the panel itself offered a few hints on what to expect in Season 4. Wilson Cruz indicated that the promise from Season 3 that Gray would be made real for everyone around him would come true. And he also said that we can expect more domestic bliss for Culber and Stamets in Season 4. Abby and Caleb, we are staring down the barrel at having two Star Trek shows on air for the first time since 1999 at the same time. How are we feeling about that, Caleb?
Someone start making Murph noises for me, please. I'm so excited. So for me, I'm a teacher, so I actually get my watching in of Star Trek and the new episodes in the morning before I go to work. So in December, it's going to be a wild time. I might have to wake up at like 3:30 in the morning to catch both episodes before I got to leave, but I'm going to do it and it's going to be a fun time. Yeah, it's, and you know, especially with Prodigy, I assume it's going to be half hour episodes after that first initial premiere, but that's an hour and a half of Star Trek. I mean, I assume the Discovery episodes are going to be anywhere from 50 minutes to an hour to kick off the season, right? And so December is going to be a lot of fun. I'm very much looking forward to that. And I love that image of Captain Burnham that they released as well, because I love those new uniforms even more than the gray uniforms from Season 3. And I can't wait to get my hands on one of those.
Yeah, I kind of feel like a teenager again, because that was how old I was the last time that there was more than one Star Trek on air at the same time. And it's invigorating is not even close enough to how I feel. I might have done a happy dance. I am also a teacher. I am not getting up at 3:30. Bless you for being able to do that, because I would be dead by about 2 p.m. But Lower Decks tends to fit in my lunch break if I can get a lunch break that day. And I can't wait. It's just a plethora of riches. And that's amazing. It's so good to see that they're not holding things back just to stretch it out. They're like, yeah, we got this. It's ready. Let's go. And that's such a Star Trek feeling. So that's great. And man, this panel just really made me feel good about the world, which is hard to do these days. But to see those three up there feeling like a family. And then if you follow Wilson Cruz at all on social media, he calls them his space kids. And he talks about them being cooler than him and they're his family. And I've been watching him back to my teenage years since he was on My So-Called Life years and years ago. And he is just glorious. He is always out there doing what's right, fighting for what's good, honoring people who deserve it, pushing for the positive. And there was a little moment in there where someone in the audience wasn't real positive during the live panel. And he just flashed those brilliant white teeth with that gorgeous smile and kept on moving. And that is such a nice thing to see. And I love the representation that Discovery has been doing. It makes me so thrilled to see that that is out there and that the majority of people who love Discovery are going, you know what? Yeah, this is how it should be. Everybody should see themselves. And that's such an important message to have out there. And I love Blue and Ian together. You can tell that they genuinely have affection for each other, that they have fun with each other. And I can't wait to see where they go with both their characters and them as people. I mean, they are very young, and watching just back to Will Wheaton, how he's grown in the decades since he's been on Trek. I can't wait to see these two powerful young people and what they do over the next decades. And thank goodness we know Saru is coming back too. Got to throw that in there, because I am a big Saru fan.
Yeah, this is extremely exciting. In some ways, it almost feels like this is the sort of gift we get from how hard the last year itself has been.
Yeah.
Because I think had Alex Kurtzman's plans from January of 2020 come to fruition the way he intended them to in January of 2020, we almost certainly would not have been getting two shows at any one time. But we also would not have gotten an 8-month gap in between the finale of Star Trek Discovery season 3 and the premiere of Star Trek Lower Decks season 2. So that was a tough 8 months to get through, especially since we were going, you know, the first 3-4 months of that were a really tough time as it relates to the pandemic. And so this now is sort of, you know, I mean, obviously we're still in tough times, but it's really nice that we now get this all-you-can-eat buffet of Star Trek over the remainder of this year. I mean, we've still got 4 episodes of Lower Decks season 2 to go, and then we're going to get Prodigy, and then we're going to get Discovery. And for 6 weeks, you will have the opportunity to have both Chinese food and pizza at the same time, right? Because they're both Star Trek, but they're different kinds of Star Trek. And I think they're going to give you different flavors and be a different experience. I mean, probably the two shows, I mean, Picard and Prodigy are probably the other two that you could run simultaneously, because they are kind of like sit at the opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of what they are and the audience they're trying to reach and who they're for. But yeah, this is really great. And those uniforms are really growing on me. I mean, we only got kind of quick glimpses of them in that first trailer, but just kind of sitting with this picture of Michael Burnham for a bit in the captain's chair, I really like the red. I really like the uniform, and boy, it looks good on her. I got to say that.
Yeah, I gotta agree. For me, it's actually gonna be the first time I've watched live New Trek, two things going simultaneously. I, you know, discovered Trek in the 90s with the original series, but I actually never watched any of the Berman era shows in original runs.
So, oh, wow, you're a real purist.
This is like Christmas, like, and it's gonna be Christmas every Thursday until Christmas, and then we get more of it, and it's gonna be great.
Well, can I just add in there, if we're calling Prodigy and Discovery the Chinese food and the pizza, Lower Deck is totally the nachos. Because they've already made them canon. Yep. So just throwing that out there.
Nachos and Mexican street corn, right?
And Mexican street corn. They go well together.
And pupusas. And yeah, they love their Latin American food on Lower Decks. Well,
speaking of representation, there you go. There's more than one way to have representation. You can have it in your people. You can have it in your food. And both of them are good.
Well, speaking of representation, let's turn to what I think is probably the biggest story out of Star Trek Day, though there is one also big story still to come after that. And that's for us to turn our attention to Star Trek Strange New Worlds. And while we did not get a trailer for Star Trek Strange New Worlds that showed us much episode footage, we did get a very cool video revealing all of the main characters of the show.
Hi, I'm Anson Mount, and I play Captain Christopher Pike on Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Pretty much every day, there's a moment where I think to myself, I'm on Star Trek.
I'm Ethan Peck, and I play Mr. Spock. Coming back to the Bridge of the Enterprise is thrilling, it's daunting, it's very surreal.
I'm Rebecca Romaine, and I play Una, also known as Number One. The character was originated by Majel Barrett Roddenberry in the original pilot of the original series, and now we finally get to really flesh out this character, and she's way more complex than y'all know.
Hi, my name is Celia Rose Gooding, and I am thrilled and honored to say that I will be playing Cadet Nyota Uhura. I am so excited to be stepping into this legacy.
My name is Jess Bush, and I am delighted to announce that I will be playing Nurse Christine Chapel. I feel extremely honored.
I'm Babs Alusimoku. I will be playing Dr. Mbenga. I'm ecstatic.
Hello, my name is Bruce Horak, and I'm thrilled to announce that I'll be playing the character of Hammer. I'm welling up with emotion as I say it.
My name is Christina Chong, and I play La'an Yunyun Singh. I am super excited to become a part of this amazing, diverse universe.
My name is Melissa Navia, and I'm super excited to announce that I will be playing Lieutenant Erica Ortegas on Star Trek Strange New Worlds. It feels really good to finally be able to say that.
The cast that we were able to pull together for this, it's exactly the kind of people you would have hoped you'd end up with on a high wire walk like this.
And And wow, what a series of surprises we have there. In addition to the characters we already knew about, Captain Pike, Mr. Spock, number one, who now gets a full name, Una Chin Reilly. We've got more returning characters from the original series than we were expecting in this show. Nurse Christine Chapel, Dr. Mbenga, and perhaps most excitingly, Cadet Niota Uhura. But in addition to the returning faces, we've also got some intriguing new faces as well. Christina Chong's La'an Noonien Singh raises many questions. That's a very famous last name in the Star Trek universe. And so what connection does La'an have to maybe one Khan Noonien Singh from the TOS episode Space Seed and Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan? And Bruce Horax Hemmer, who's a new character, breaks new representation ground for the Star Trek franchise. Hemmer appears to be one of the Andorian subspecies, the Enar, last seen in Star Trek Enterprise Season 4. The episode was the Enar, and appropriately for a blind race, the actor Bruce Horax himself is also legally blind, which is the first time an actor with a visible disability has been cast in the Star Trek franchise in a main cast role. In addition to the characters, we also get a look at some new uniforms for the Strange New Worlds Enterprise crew. Gone are the asymmetrical Discovery-style collars, replaced with a black undershirt and top that are similar to those used in the Kelvin Timeline movies. And we get some brief glimpses of the set, including the transporter room set that images leaked from a couple of months back, and also a quick glimpse of the bridge. It does appear, maybe, that the bridge has also been tweaked from its Season 2 appearance in Discovery, as it now looks like the back corridor that was present in the Discovery set has at least been partially removed, in that there's a shot of Pike sitting in the captain's chair, and if it were the same shot from Season 2 of Discovery, you would have seen a section of that back corridor at the back, but it's not present in this view from Strange New Worlds, indicating that at least that side of the corridor no longer exists. Well, Abby and Caleb, there are so many possibilities from these character announcements. What were your reactions? Abby, why don't you kick us off?
All right. Well, my very first reaction to this trailer was one that made my husband just shake his head at me, because I literally squealed loud enough for him to hear a room away. It's an Enar! Because I am a huge Enterprise fan, as anyone who follows me knows. And that was just chef's kiss, beautiful and completely unexpected to me. And so that made me really happy. And I love, again, we have talked about representation, what, 3 or 4 times already now. This is one of the reasons that Trek gets me excited, because they're pushing the boundaries of all of that. And I was introduced to Trek on TNG, and I didn't go back to the original series until years later, because it was the 90s and it wasn't so feasible, and it wasn't in syndication and VHS tapes, and we all know that jazz. And I love it, but sometimes I have a hard time watching a lot of it back to back, because there's some kind of dated moments. So I feel like Strange New Worlds is this one I'm the most pumped for from all of this, because I think it's going to have a modernized TOS feel and spirit, which is what really hooks you in. And I hope that they continue to keep pushing these boundaries like they did in TOS and like they are now. And I'm hoping that in 55 more years, we're going to look back at this and see how much we've grown again. And it really seems, just from the excitement of this cast and from this panel, that they're really doing that. I love that they're honoring and expanding the history of the characters and the ship. And this is a gorgeous show. And I know it doesn't seem like a big thing, but when Rebecca Romijn was talking about how they even went back and took inspiration about the hair and the nails, come on, Trek does incredible things with costuming and makeup and hair. And you know, hair, as the female here, doesn't seem important, but I know if you're listening to this podcast, and I know you two I'm talking to, you can identify most episodes of Trek in a frame based on the hair you see in that sure. frame. So I think that's amazing, because when you saw, you know, Christine Chapel modernized with that hair, it's perfect. It's just honoring and expanding. And I am so excited to see where Strange New Worlds goes with all this. And Anson Mount is the perfect person to helm this. He is a fabulous human being. So I can't wait to see this show.
I am also really excited to see the show. One gut reaction I had was, oh my gosh, number one, N Christine Chappell could potentially be on screen together when we know that the original was both played by Mae Jill Barrett, which is, you know, just great. I think that's brilliant. That's going to be leading to some comedic moments, hopefully, I would think. But, you know, I don't want to just share my reactions. I think it's really important. You know, we've been talking about representation here. I think it's important to lift up Black voices in the fandom. And specifically, I was really moved during Star Trek Day by all the different threads from fellow educator and friend and Trek Ranks alumna, Ebony Thomas, who is at Eb Watches Trek on Twitter. I'm going to paraphrase just a couple of things that she was saying, but I think it's really important here. In response to Uhura being in this new Strange New Worlds show, she actually posted a thread about the Kelvin timeline representation of that movie and how they did the whole Uhura-Spock relationship and how she didn't mind it, but the execution ultimately didn't work. And she goes on to say it's especially problematic when a Black woman character from a specific African nation that gets named in canon but hasn't had any direct reference since TOS. When the show in the 60s did better than the films in the 21st century, you've got a problem. She further goes on to say that is why who gets to be in the writer's room matters. Forget your little ship wars. Do right by Black women characters. For me, just to read that, I'm like, yes, Strange New Worlds is totally on board with that. I think, you know, there's a very definite intention with everything going on with this Kurtzman era of Star Trek, especially with representation and who's in the writer's room and who's helping craft these stories and getting input from the actors and actresses themselves. And I think that's really, really important. And so just to even get that bombshell news of Uhura as a cadet is just automatically, it's going to enrich that character so much. Same with M'Benga. M'Benga, we only had for like, what, two episodes, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
First off, does that man look wonderful in that medical
uniform? Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Right? Right?
That whole cast is stunning.
Yes. And, you know, and my gut reaction with those uniforms, I didn't love them, you know, at first glance, but now I've had it let it sit for a couple of days. And I actually really, really like the kind of bridge that they have between the Disco Enterprise uniforms and what we know is coming in the Cage era uniforms. And I think that's really cool. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to getting to know more about M'Benga. Like you said, there's Noonien Singh. That's going to be a big thing. I'm really interested to see how that goes. There was another thing just from Ebony that I wanted to point out too on a related tangent, but she also went on later in the thread to point out that Discovery and Lower Decks gave Michael Burnham and Beckett Mariner. They're allowed to be complicated, flawed, sometimes annoying, heartbreakingly heroic, and for many of us, totally rootworthy. And then she ends the tweet with complexity. And that's kind of summarized what I'm really looking for with Strange New Worlds. Obviously, we're going to get episodic Star Trek, but with these legacy characters, I really am looking forward to that enrichment and that complexity. I want to know what Uhura was like as a cadet, right? Even when she was on TOS, you know, she was not always in the foreground. And so to really give a proper reintroduction to that character is going to be a beautiful thing. And I think that's really noteworthy.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled to get the opportunity to learn more about the character of Uhura, right? I mean, I think Ebony's points about the character in the Kelvin timeline are really well taken. I mean, the Uhura of the Kelvin timeline's character story is entirely passed through the relationship with Spock, right? I mean, aside from that earliest scene, you know, where we discover what a great linguist she is, everything else about her character in those movies is sort of as part of that anchoring point of the relationship with Spock. And so it'd be fascinating to get the opportunity to meet an Uhura who, hopefully, I mean, we don't know for sure, is not encumbered by that relationship and who we can spend some more time with and get to know as a person. Because as you say, Caleb, right, like, you know, we love Uhura from the original series, but as a character, you know, was not as well served. I mean, basically only Kirk, Spock, and McCoy were well served characters on that show. The rest of the cast were really kind of genuinely supporting characters. And so, you know, I mean, Uhura is a character who she loses all of her memory and the ability to speak English in one episode. And then, you know, is right as rain the next episode again after the accelerated learning program to put everything back in place. And so, you know, I'd love to learn more about the character. I'd love to learn more about her history and her heritage, which clearly was a through line for the character in the original series, but not one that was kind of particularly well explored. And now we get the chance to do that. And I'm really thrilled about the possibility of doing that. Thrilled about the possibility of exploring Dr. M'Benga more, right? The Vulcan expert doctor, you know, yeah, he's in a couple episodes of TOS, but is sort of a minor player in that. And then also, honestly, get more of an opportunity to learn more about Christine Chapel too, right? Again, that's a character who her whole arc through the original series was very much, you know, in places oriented around her relationship with Spock. I mean, it was not an actual relationship, but her feelings for the character of Spock and what that meant and what she wanted in regards to that relationship. And so I think, you know, seeing Jess Bush's portrayal of Chapel and hopefully having it be a bit more than just, you know, she's enamored with Mr. Spock will be really interesting to kind of dive further into that character. And it makes sense that some of these characters and crew members would have predated the arrival of Kirk on the Enterprise. You know, up until this point, we've sort of just assumed that, you know, the whole crew shifted over and with the exception of Spock, but like Spock carried over. So why would not other characters have done the same? And I think, you know, having Uhura there as a cadet's great because that means she could leave at some point and then come back again in time for TOS. And some of these other characters who, yeah, it just turns out they've been on the ship for a little while longer than we thought they were, which is really terrific. And so much possibility and prospect around La'an Noonien-Singh. I mean, until we really know more about that, you know, everything is just wild speculation, but clearly it's intentional and looking forward to seeing where that ultimately goes. And the uniforms, I'm not yet kind of totally on board with the uniforms, but my thinking about them is, you know, I actually think I'd like to see them in motion. We really only see them in this little video in static shots, someone sitting down and they're wearing the uniform. I would like to see them up and about because they do seem much more designed for movement, right? And to be, and for utility and versatility rather than necessarily to look good at a bridge station, which I think like the Discovery uniforms were more that. They didn't sound like they were the easiest to move around in because they were so kind of well tailored to the actor's forms. Tons to look forward to in this one and tons of prospect and potential for sometime in 2022.
And we also need to make sure we mention that Bruce Horak is also an actor. Well, he's more than an actor. He's an artist as well, but I believe he is legally blind, correct?
Yep. Absolutely.
So, and to have him playing Einar, it's just great. It continues the trend of representation, especially for disabled peoples. You know, that's great. They started that with Discovery. And I know, you know, they don't get it perfect all the time, right? But at least they are intentionally thinking about it and trying to make moves that do allow people to be seen on screen, which is great.
Yeah, I would say the two, from having run the TrekCore Twitter account on Wednesday evening while the Star Trek Day events were going on, I would say the two casting announcements that it seemed like really resonated immediately with people were one, Celia Rose Gooding as Cadet Uhura, and two, Bruce Horak as Hema, and the fact that he is a blind actor playing a blind character and the kind of, you know, new ground that breaks in terms of visible disabilities and representation of visible disabilities by the actors playing the characters, right? I mean, obviously, we've had representation of a disabled character on the show before, Geordi LaForge and his visor, but the actor was an able-bodied actor. And so really nice that they have created an opportunity for an actor with a disability to be able to portray a character with a disability and bring that representation to the screen. Though, I guess, you know, from the Einar perspective, it's not a disability, right? That's just how they are. So, it'd be really interesting to see how that plays out over the course of the season.
I think it's interesting because I saw some people talking about, well, how is he going to interact with things? And then people immediately brought up, well, think about Tuvok in Year of Hell when he was blinded and they had the tactile interfaces. And think about, you know, Aurelio and Ken Mitchell, and they've moved that around. So there's some precedent there. And I think it's going to be a really interesting way to see how our crew, who pride themselves on being open-minded and encompassing of all these differences, work with somebody who is so different right up front like that. And if it's going to be something that they deal with and specifically talk about, or if it's just gonna be like, yeah, this is normal, we're cool with this, let's keep going on with life, this is how it should be. And both of those have really good points of whichever direction they take it in. And just because this is going to be an episodic show doesn't mean we're not going to have these connections and this character growth. I mean, think back to the 90s. We had episodic Star Trek for the most part, and we saw characters with amazing arcs. So I can't wait to see how this all connects to the bigger picture and how they bring that representation back in like that.
Yeah, and with our Einar character, character. I think the other thing too is it'll be interesting to see maybe how they use the telepathy that's paired with the ANR as, you know, a means for him to interact with the crew. And, you know, that we haven't really had a telepath on screen in a while. So the last time we had a telepath on screen, it didn't work all of the time. So it'll be nice to see them use that in a different way. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah. I mean, on the blind person on a starship thing, I would just say that, you know, if we in the 21st century can figure out how to make accommodations for people with limited vision, then I'm fairly certain that a starship of the 23rd century that can go faster than light can figure it out as well, right? You know, and in some ways that's sort of like the beauty of the TOS set design, right? Like, who knows how any of those little buttons work? There's no labels on them or anything, but everybody seems to know. So, you know, it's like, it's the future, people. Of course it's all fine. And lastly, this week, but by no means least, we got a new trailer for Star Trek Picard Season 2.
To heal our future, we have to repair the past.
I foresaw you as a man who chose the stars. But after all this time, I've come to wonder, have you been seeking or running?
Recall what I said, Jean-Luc, when last we parted ways. The trial never ends.
Q.
I am way too old for your bullshit.
Guys, we got big problems. Something moved us.
Q went back in time and turned our world into a totalitarian nightmare.
Do you understand what this means? Time has been broken.
I will get us home together. The only way to heal our future is to go back and repair the past. There are ways of traveling in time.
Great. Now what? Welcome to the Earth of the 21st century.
You're saying we can undo this nightmare?
Let's go to work.
You can pilot a starship, but you can't drive.
You two really need to work on your communication.
Driving!
See, there you go. Now you're in sync.
We have 3 days before the future is changed irrevocably. But even in the darkest of circumstances, there is a light.
Where are you taking us?
Home.
The trailer, which also gives us a better look at what to expect from the second season, alternate timelines, a near-modern day Los Angeles, the Borg Queen, also says that season 2 will premiere in February of 2022. And if that was not enough, we were also treated to the news that Star Trek Picard will, as has long been rumored, be returning for a third season, seemingly confirming the news that seasons 2 and 3 of Picard are in fact filming back to back. We know that filming continues even as recently as this week. So it was maybe the worst kept secret in Hollywood. We've even talked about it on this show, and I tend not to dabble in too many rumors, but now at least it is confirmed. Caleb, Abby, what were your reactions to our latest look at season 2 of Picard and the news that it will be returning for a third season? Caleb?
2 words. Sanctuary District. Yes. Okay. I was not expecting that that was the time period they were going to. And now the whole Delta with the highways makes a lot of sense on that original promo poster. And
yeah,
it, you know, we already know that Sisko, you know, visited the Sanctuary District in past tense, and there was already some slight fudging of that timeline as a result. And now that makes me wonder, you know, what exactly did Q do to mess up that portion of the timeline? I mean, is there some way that they that he prevented Sisko from going back? And how does that change the timeline? You know, I don't know if Sisko will be directly in it. Obviously, we know Avery Brooks is retired and far away from Star Trek, but it's cool to kind of play around those events. And especially since we know that there was a DS9 connection from the original teaser trailer with the Reckoning tablet. I think this is the DS9 connection, right? I mean, it'd be hard pressed to think it's anything else for right now, but that's really exciting for me. And it's cool that they, you know, just get to roam around LA and San Francisco and, you know, the other places that they're shooting. And it's going to have almost like a Voyage Home feel, but like a little more serious, you know? So that's really exciting. And I'm just looking forward to all of Picard season two. I was not as on board with Picard season one. I think there were some really, really great episodes in that season, but it was admittedly a little rocky. So I think this seems like a solid course correction, at least from what little we know so far. So yeah.
All right. So I'm a huge sucker for anything time travel. Like, I just really love it. I love the paradoxes. I love the mind bending. I love alternative universes. I think it is such an opportunity to have different things going on and to explore different assets and parts of characters and parts of the canon that people really wanted but didn't necessarily want. And I love that Star Trek is hopeful and positive and a view of the future where we got things mostly right. Well, this is going to be a little delve into where maybe we didn't get things mostly right, but it's not as over the top as Mirror Universe, where we definitely didn't get stuff right. And I like that gray area. And I love the idea of coming back to something that's kind of modern. I mean, Trek has always had commentary on the modern day, but a lot of times it's subtle, and I'm putting that in air quotes that nobody can see, because everybody figures it out, but they can hide behind, oh, this is fiction, this is space. Well, this isn't as much. It's just slightly ahead of us future, and that's interesting. And that the fact that we're going to have Q and the Borg in here again at the same time offers heaps of possibilities. And we know that Whoopi Goldberg has confirmed that Guinan is going to show up at some point, whether it's season two or season three or both. And that throws a lot of stuff in there that's interesting, because we know she's already been back in old time San Francisco. We know she's been around, and time for the Elorians is different. So there are so many possibilities here. It's really interesting. And I like that as dark as Picard is as a series, there were still moments of humor in this trailer. I mean, you're having the Raffi and Seven relationship and that little bit with Jurati. That was just a moment of levity, which I think it really needed. And I love the fact that Elnor is continuing the tradition of, oh, you have pointy ears, just put some big hair over it, which is just such a little nod to all the old Trek, where that was pretty much all you do. Just, you know, stick your hair on. You're on top of your ears. Nobody will notice. And this has made me so curious, because it wasn't the direction I was expecting, but it's not an unwelcome direction. So I can't wait to see where this one goes.
I think that's the perfect way of putting it, Abby. Unexpected, but not unwelcome as a direction for season two of Picard. I'm also fascinated by the question of, like, how many episodes are we seeing footage from, right? Like, when we were talking about the Prodigy trailer, we were talking about how it felt very much like that was almost certainly all footage from the series premiere. This feels like it's obviously that there's way too much happening in this for it all to fit into one episode. But are we looking at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 episodes, right? Like, where do they ultimately end up going from here? I mean, there is one moment where Picard says something like, we've got 3 days to rescue the future, which makes you think that, you know, they probably fit that in a bit fewer than 10 episodes. So, like, then where does the season go, and where does it push towards, and what is it they're trying to accomplish with this, and what role and how much of a role does sort of near present day Los Angeles play in the story? Is it the Mirror Universe trip in Discovery season one, where it's like 4 episodes out of a 15 episode season? Or is it the season, you know, in which they spend 8 episodes there after 1 episode in regular time and 1 episode in a totalitarian future alternate federation in which Picard is some kind of, you know, dictatorial warlord, at least seems to be the implication of what we've seen in the trailer. So yeah, really, really fascinating. And I am very heartened by the funny moments that there are in the trailer, right? Like, Star Trek Picard season one was not a terribly funny season of Star Trek, right? I mean, there were moments of levity, but they were relatively few and far between in what was otherwise
a very serious season. And so to have chosen so many moments of humor in the Rathy Seven dynamic, there are a few other places where there are just like genuine jokes, right? Yeah. You know, Q, I'm too old for your bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
that's a funny line, right? I mean, there are funny lines in this trailer, which makes me think that maybe in season two, they're sort of indicating a bit of a rebalancing of tone away from some of that, you know, much heavier, more serious stuff towards something that has a little bit more levity and a little bit more lighter moments that run through it. So, you know, we'll see, right? I mean, again, we don't have all that long to wait. February of 2022 is actually not too far away from now, since it's now already mid-September. But yeah, I mean, and the Borg, I mean, Annie Wershing is the Borg Queen. Has the Borg Queen ever looked scarier than she looks in this trailer? I mean, like,
nope.
Genuinely chilling in terms of that appearance. It's like, it looks like it's an alternate timeline Borg Queen in that totalitarian federation alternative future in which they've like captured the Borg Queen and they've got her on ice, but still creepy as hell. And I love it, right? Like, let's push further on the creep factor of the Borg, right? That they should not be becoming less creepy over time. They should be becoming more creepy. So yeah, this is really, really exciting. And hey, they're gonna, you know, and maybe this is a story that plays out over 20 episodes, right? That's the thing we don't know is, you know, season one was a 10 episode story and it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. What about season two? Is it a one season story and then season three is going to have another story again? Or are we seeing now the potentially remaining 20 episodes of this show, since it's, my guess is they're filming season two and three back to back, and then that's going to be it for Star Trek Picard. We don't know that, but that's just my guess. You know, are we going to see a two season arc that will be one complete story? Not sure yet, but very excited to find out.
Well, and let's not forget that Picard is a synth now, and that changes his dynamic with Q quite a bit. So let's throw all that in there. And maybe that's going to have more of an impact than we think it is in all of this time travel. So there's a lot of open pages here that are just waiting to be written on.
All right. Well, we've talked about the facts, and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain. But it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, I and my guests give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about any of the shows or the future of the franchise. So Caleb and Abby, let's hear your theory or wish for this week. And let's start with you, Caleb.
Okay, so we know from the original series, the couple of episodes that Mbenga is in, right, that he wasn't the chief medical officer, right? Because that's McCoy's job.
Yes.
But if he's serving somewhat in that capacity in Strange New Worlds, I want to know, like, what is the long-term purpose? Like, what's the arc? Like, when he transfers over from one command to another, what happens there? Like, that's the thing that just sticks in my mind. And that's what I'm really looking forward to the most is, you know, more on Mbenga and what ultimately happens through his tenure under Pike and then transferring over to Kirk.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Like, you know, it may be the case that he is not the chief medical officer. It could be that they're kind of pulling a Discovery in which, you know, Culber is the kind of main doctor character on the show, but he is not the chief medical officer of the USS Discovery. And so maybe Boyce is still the chief medical officer of the Enterprise, but we just never see him. But I don't know. That seems very convoluted and difficult to pull off for a show that's doing episodic Star Trek. So yeah, presumably he is the chief medical officer, in which case, why does he end up giving up that job to McCoy and becoming second fiddle? I think that they would not have made the decision to do this without having some kind of arc in mind for how you get from the end of Strange New Worlds to A Private Little War, I think, which was the first episode he showed up in TOS. But yeah, lots of questions abound.
Well, and I think it's super interesting to know that you have the end of his story, kind of, or at least the end of what we know of his story, already written. And it's almost like working backwards. And that gives you a lot of potential for some interesting moments and more of those gray areas that we were talking about too, because, you know, there could be that he chooses to do it. It could be a Tom Paris 30 days situation where he's demoted for a choice that he made that he felt was right, but didn't necessarily follow rules or anything in between. So I agree. This is a fascinating character to watch and see where we go with it.
And, you know, I even wonder now, you know, what if the choice that makes him step down is guilt over Pike's injuries, you know, at the end of the series, right? Like,
yeah,
maybe that's what they're setting up, you know, and we, you know, get to know Mbenga and this like really strong emotional tie to Captain Pike with him. And what if that's what they're ultimately game planning is he feels some sort of guilt over that, the inability to help Pike after his injuries, you know, that'd be really interesting to explore as well.
That would be super interesting. That's really interesting. I'd love that.
Yeah.
All right, Abby, wish or theory, hit us with it.
All right. So you've heard me mention a few times here, and anyone who knows me knows I adore Enterprise, and it's always kind of the black sheep of the Star Trek family. And I like that Modern Trek is making more references and connections and pulling more of that, and not just with having an Anar in, but, you know, little things on Lower Decks and all that. And there's been lots of chatter on Twitter about perhaps the Zindi Aquatics work in Certation Ops.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be awesome. But my hope is, and this has been my hope for 20 years at this point, let's give Enterprise some love. Let's wrap up some of those threads that weren't. And I mean, hello, we had Jolene Baylock on the carpet at Star Trek Day, which my heart about first.
You noticed that, huh?
I sure did. Like, I love T'Pol. I love that character. And the fact that she came back after everything, just that was 20 years of joy right there. But what I really want to see them do is let's wrap up some of this temporal Cold War. Let's flesh it out. Let's fill it up. And I was thinking, okay, this is going to be more of like maybe in Strange New Worlds. But now after all this, maybe it's Picard. Maybe time being broken in Picard is a temporal Cold War thing. Maybe Q is going back and saying, hey, you know what? We thought this was done. It's not. And there are still factions working on stuff. And hey, look at this. This happened because people messed around with the timelines. And what are we going to do about it? And that is just so intriguing to me because I love time travel and I love Enterprise. And there's been enough references. I mean, Discovery even referenced it. Maybe this is where they're going to tie it in. And that could be so interesting and so exciting. And maybe we can have the return of the Suluban, which I really feel did not ever get to expand into the potential that they had as a cool race.
Who do you think? Future guy is Khan Noonien Singh, right? And La'an is the tie-in?
Could be. There's so many possibilities. But man, if I ever find out who Future Guy is, I really hope that it is worth 20 years of waiting.
Sure.
I just make it something mind-blowingly fantastic, please.
I'm going to stare into my crystal ball and call it Rios. I'm saying Rios is going to be Future Guy. No, I'm just completely off the end. But that would be hilarious, wouldn't it? But also like, wait, why? Why would Rios want to do that? No, that would just be a wild theory. Sorry. But I love that theory. I think the temporal Cold War is the one thing that, you're right, didn't really have a satisfying resolution. And I absolutely would love to see that play to fruition here.
Totally. Give me as many Enterprise tie-ins and wrap-ups as possible. I'm all on board. I mean, I'm still holding out hope for, I think my personal pet theory is that Section 31, if the show goes ahead, is set in the sort of Romulan War or post-Romulan War timeframe, yeah. And that will allow us to revisit the Enterprise timeframe and some of those characters. But absent something like that, then yeah, any opportunity to tie into the other shows and wrap some of this stuff up. And Jolene, we were thrilled to see you at Star Trek Day. And yeah, would hope it wasn't too boring, right? Like sitting through a bunch of people talking about shows that you're not on. So, you know, maybe she's there for a reason. That's the hope anyway. All right. So here comes my theory, which is that I don't think we're grappling quite enough with the prospects of how much Star Trek we have coming down the pike now. I genuinely think that with the exception of a few weeks off, like the week after Lower Decks season 2 before Prodigy season 1 airs, I think there might be a week or two in between when Discovery season 4 ends and when Picard season 2 picks up. I genuinely think we are about to have basically a year's worth of new Star Trek episodes.
Whoa.
Because follow the calendar with me, right? So we got Lower Decks on right now. That's going to run through October the 14th. 21st, there'll be no new Star Trek. 28th, we've got Star Trek Prodigy kicking off a 1 hour first season. Then on the 18th, we've got Discovery premiering. Now, Discovery, we're expecting, is going to run for 13 episodes, which means that assuming it runs consecutively every Thursday from the 18th of November, the finale for Discovery season 4 will be February 10th, 2022. Picard says it's kicking off in February of 2022, and there's only two Tuesdays left after the 10th in February of 2022. That's either the 17th or the 24th. So it will either premiere on the 17th or the 24th, and it will then run for 10 episodes. Well, let's say it's the 17th. That means that Picard season two, season finale, will be April the 28th. If there's a week in between Discovery and Picard, that's going to put it in early May. That's going to put it at May 5th. Now, by that point, Star Trek Strange New Worlds will have been done filming its first season for a year, so you're not going to sit on it any longer, which means that, let's just say, there's maybe 1 week in between Picard season two and Strange New Worlds season one. That means Strange New Worlds season one kicks off May 19th, 2022 and runs through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, runs through July 21st. Now, Star Trek Lower Decks season two premiered August 11th, 2022, which means that that puts us at a full year of Star Trek. And I think you could go even further because Lower Decks has been ready to go. Season one and two were ready to go in August of both years. The timeline for kicking off writing and production of season three matches season two from last year, which means that Lower Decks season three should be ready to go by August of 2022. So if Star Trek Strange New Worlds finale is going to be July 21st, if it's July 21st, then you've potentially only got a week or two before you're in August and you've got Lower Decks on again. That runs for 10 weeks. And then you may be set up for Prodigy Season 2 to come on, which is going to put you all the way through the end of 2022. It is not unrealistic to say that with the exception of a couple of weeks here and there, we are looking at the very distinct possibility that we are going to have new Star Trek almost every week between now and the end of 2022. Caleb and Abby, what do you think of that? Caleb?
I'm shaking. I'm so excited. It's, you know, and here's the thing, like we're obviously in this new golden age of Star Trek, right? This is a renaissance of sorts. And, you know, we are so fortunate to have that to look forward to every single week when everything else really is terribly bleak outside of, you know, the Star Trek, the world, right? The real world is not getting any better. You know, there are certain things that we are hoping will work out in our favor largely with, you know, the pandemic and things like that. But we need that hope. And I think it'll be great to see actually how many new fans come to Star Trek as a result of just it's always on, you know, and Paramount Plus, you know, they're gearing up to have a broader international launch with that. You know, we're going to be looking at potentially a lot of new fans all across the world coming to Star Trek. Olivia, actually, from I Quit Star Trek Pod, made a point the other day about how putting Star Trek behind a paywall a little bit might maybe deter some people, but Paramount Plus really is beefing up what it has available in addition to just Star Trek. And I think that makes it a little more appetizing to, you know, jump on board that streaming service. I think it's well worth it for the price, especially now that, you know, Netflix is almost twice the price and you're getting arguably not as many good things on there. It's interesting. I'm really looking forward to uninterrupted Star Trek and all the new fans that come as a result of it.
Well, I want to say, I just think with a lot of the larger franchises in the world putting out heaps of content, since content is more readily available these days, is about time. And this has been my franchise for the majority of my life. And I am so excited that not only are we getting more of it, we are getting more of it that is quality. They're not just putting things out to put them out and to have them out there. They're really taking the time. And if watching all this stuff on Star Trek Day taught me anything, it's that the people that are in charge of these shows, from the writers to the creatives, the producers, the showrunners, the cast, the crews, all of them, they love Star Trek. They are honoring Star Trek. They are making this legacy continue, and they are looking into the future to make this all that it possibly can be and all that they have loved it being for the time in their life that they have been part of it. And that is more than you can say for a lot of other things out there, and exactly what I want Star Trek to be.
Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, or Prodigy that you'd like to share? tweet them to me at Weekly Trek or email them to me at weeklytrek@thetricordertransmissions.com, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my two amazing guests, Abby Summer and Caleb Dorsch, for joining me today. Abby and Caleb, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation? Abby?
You can find me on Twitter at Abby M. Summer. That's S-O-M-M-E-R. And please hop on and listen to our podcast. My friend Melanie Shuttlepod 2 and I do an Enterprise Rewatch podcast, and that's at First Flight Pod.
And you can also find me at Twitter at Rogue Moog, R-O-G-U-E-M-O-G-H.
And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, Caleb. Thank you, Abby. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.